anyway. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. I waited a day to do it, so I figure it's not that big of a deal. sometimes I get bored, and you're like, yeah, let's throw some Def Leppard lyrics up there. Sure.
Every sports fan has an opinion. Well, these are ours.
Ours.
Welcome to Brock and Pep's Unsportsmanlike Convo.
Right! Right!
And here are your hosts, Brock Fleming and Pep Cariotti.
Right on. It's Big B and P-Dog in the house.
So
we're getting right into it. Super Bowl wrap-up. NFL season is over. What do you think? Super Bowl 58, good number.
You know what? Someone posted something. I think it was like one of those random Kansas City Chiefs groups. They posted, we won it for Derek Thomas. I think he wore 58, eh?
He did wear 58, yeah. I used to have his jersey there around somewhere.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, it was massive.
He was really a great player. Like he was, I remember him vividly growing up in high, like, you know, when I was in high school. And I think he lasted until the early 2000s, maybe. I'm kind of losing my track of time here, but.
Yeah, that's what happens when all old. The time is catching up to us. Yeah.
What a great player.
Yeah, it would have been, yeah, early 2000s, late. Yeah, in that range anyway. Mm. But he was phenomenal. What was it? Was it a car accident?
Car accident. Rushing to get somewhere when he could have flown. I think he had attended a charity event and he just said, look, I'll meet you guys wherever. And that was that. But yeah, he didn't die in the accident. He survived. I think he had he died of a blood clot. I think he was paralyzed, if I'm not mistaken. Right.
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah. And he died of a heart attack. But anyway, all that to say, you know, yeah, it was four good quarters, and I include the overtime because the first quarter was a bit of a dud. I know I was watching it with my sister and my niece. You guys were watching it together. What did you think about the start of the Super Bowl? Were you guys disappointed? Were you, because the first quarter was pretty bad?
Well, look, the start of our Super Bowl was crowning a new chili contest champion, and that goes to Mr. Scott Endicott, who won the. I don't have the roadcaster. I don't have the sound effects anymore.
Okay.
Shout out to Scott. Put some effort in there, and he won the chili contest.
Congratulations, Scott.
First part of the Super Bowl, yeah, was kind of slow. Again, a bit of a defensive back and forth. And, I mean, people attribute scoring as being exciting. But if Kansas City is able to keep the high-powered 49ers offense from throwing up a bunch of scores – like that in itself is pretty impressive. Mm. So you start to see a bit of the matchup play and kind of the approach that KC was taking to the Niners. And even, you know, the same with how the Niners were doing that with KC. Now they don't have the same amount of weapons, but when you have a Mahomes, Kelsey as being two of those guys, that's pretty darn good. You start looking at the bookends, right? So Chase and Bosa coming at Mahomes. Like Chase started off the game on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know that those tackles for KC are susceptible to some of those moves. Now, you know, there's all this conspiracy stuff now about the Chiefs never getting called for holding. And yes, was there holding? For sure, there was holding. Does that mean that the Niners weren't holding? No. Does that mean whatever? It is what it is. Like they weren't, in my opinion, holds that were missed that were really affecting the outcome of a play necessarily. Like they weren't game changing calls that were missed. So I would almost prefer a game umped the way it was this time where they kind of let guys play. Like there wasn't a lot of pass interference calls. There wasn't a lot of holding calls. There wasn't a lot of ref interference, if you will, or ref controlled plays throughout the Super Bowl, which I can appreciate.
I was more than happy with the officiating. There was nothing egregious, nothing that they missed, nothing that affected the game, really. I thought it was refereed quite well, all things considered how poorly the refereeing has been all year. But it was, I'll give the Super Bowl a B plus. It was super entertaining. It went into overtime. I was excited. I couldn't believe what Mahomes was able to do, like with his feet, you know, changing his arm angle for certain passes and finding his guys, and like full props to that team for winning that game. And, you know, it was going to take a muff punt or something to turn the tide, and lo and behold, that's what we had. So
it was on that note too, just before you go past that, because I listened to New Heights, right, the Kelce podcast, and I'll listen to the first little bit, or maybe his take on the Super Bowl, like from a player who's in the game's perspective. And I was a little disappointed, and I haven't listened to the newest one, but they were describing that muff punt as being such a huge turning event in the game, which it was, but they were talking about the player trying to do too much and trying to keep the ball from bouncing further for his offense, all that kind of stuff. And the kind of like not throwing him under the bus. I don't even think they used his name. I can't even remember his name right now. It's like, I think it's McLeod or something. Is that who it was?
He's the returner, but it hit the up guy.
Exactly. They didn't touch upon that, saying like, well, he was trying to make a, you know, maybe play outside of his normal means, like trying to do too much as a punt returner. But it clearly went off his teammate's foot, and he was only reacting to the fact that it was a live ball at that point. He was trying to get on it. So kudos to him. Like, he wasn't playing outside or trying to do anything special in a big Super Bowl. He was reacting to a play where it inadvertently went off of his teammate's foot, and he had to do that. So I just, you know, whatever. I heard that podcast, and I heard that they were never talking about it hitting somebody else. So it made it look, made him look bad.
Let me tell you, teams, I'm sure we'll be the only two people in the entire continent that'll talk about special teams, but I'm going to put this on. There was some excellent punting. Like, the Kansas City punter was booming him, and it was really changing the
he's a Gator. Tommy Towson is a Gator.
There you go.
Huge leg.
He helped, you know, flip the field a couple of times. And it's like, you know, and I'm not here to talk about Pittsburgh at all. I'm not gonna, but like, boy, oh boy, when you're a team that struggles to score, you know, and you need to flip the field and you play the field position game, how important is a punter? And I want to ask you this, actually. So, you know, the debate is that does Pittsburgh go and draft a punter? And they're like, well, no, you don't draft. You don't get to spend your, you know, the first five rounds on a punter. The Baltimore Ravens, their punter was a fourth round draft pick. So what's your take on, like, if there's a real need, do you just wait out the draft and then you pick up a guy who was undrafted? Like, what's your take on that?
It's a tough one because it really comes down to, yes, a need, but then also the differential in terms of drafting that specific player and what his abilities are versus what you would wait for. So it's kind of like the whole, do you punt on fourth down or do you go for it? And analytics say, you know what, like, it might be just as good to go for it and say, if you get it 50% of the time, you're better off, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. If I draft this guy in the fourth round and he's bombing 60 yarders on average, but I wait and the average for people coming out of college and I could pick up are around 50. So you're like, it's a 10 yard difference. Does that make a difference? You know, or what is the, you know, his longest could be, maybe he's at 70 or maybe he hits like a two or three 80 yarders. And then you say, well, now it's a 30 yard difference. So where does it become beneficial for you? Mm-hmm. Like, anyway, so I can't give you a black or white. You know, at Pittsburgh, you say, well, our offense is crap, so let's make sure we can flip the field because we're going to play defense and stuff. Sure. You know, if that's the approach you want to get, I would probably have drafted and taken a shot on somebody else to say, you know what, I need more line help. I need a receiver who might step up, you know, get those diamond in the rough receivers and stuff, skilled positions later in the thing, or a lineman, and then take your chances there. That's just me. I also can't punt the ball for shit. So, you know, don't take offense if you're a kicker listening to that, but like, Towson went what, 5 for 254. So he averaged 50 plus yards, or right over 50 yards a punt in that Super Bowl.
Incredible, man.
That's literally excellent. Half the field.
I want to say the league average is probably, if I were to venture to say, I wish we had our fact checkers, but I'd probably venture to say the league average is somewhere between 40 and 45. So if you're shooting up another 5, 6, 7 yards, and that's his average. He boomed one for 60, I think, during the game. Anyway, again, not want to spend the whole podcast talking about kickers and punters, but you know, I thought Jake Moody, who had a very shaky NFC championship, I thought he played pretty well. Obviously, the Chiefs kicker might be the best in the NFL. Hey, how about the kickers going back-to-back, breaking the Super Bowl record for distance?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That was pretty cool.
Like, I don't know how – was it Butkus? I don't know how his didn't get blocked. Like, it was
low.
So low, mm-hmm. and it went through – like 3 or 4 arms that were up there. I mean, you talk about special teams. What's one of the biggest plays was that blocked extra point.
Yep.
You know, which put everything into reachable things. So when KC goes down and they can't get the touchdown, they're not forcing it on a fourth down, where if they don't get it, that's 50-50. If they don't get it, now they're still 4 down and San Francisco has the ball. Because of that, they were able to kick the field goal and tie it up. And now it's still a new ball game. That blocked punt, blocked extra point, and the overtime coin toss was probably the difference in that game.
So I agree with you 100%. And the game itself, okay, it ends in a tie, fine, whatever. We know the extra point would have made the huge difference. Just from a strategic standpoint, like getting up a point would have it changed the whole dynamic of what KC had to do. But okay, it gets to overtime. I'm still not quite sure what all the talk is in terms of the overtime. And you mentioned the coin toss. What am I missing? Like, did San Fran do something wrong? Like, I don't know what's going on. Explain to me.
Yeah. So one, I'll say I went and looked at I did our fact checking. The NFL average punting for this last season, the highest one was 53, and that was Ryan Stonehouse.
Okay.
Everything else is between, you know, really lower 40s to mid 40s to about to 53. So it's all within that range. Again, do you draft a fourth round pick for that? Probably not. Okay. Yep. Overtime. Overtime during the season is the modified version that happened a couple of years ago, where if you start with the ball first and you score a touchdown, that's it. The game's over.
Correct.
If you kick a field goal, the other team has an opportunity to do it. Perfect. In the playoffs, if it goes to overtime, each team will have the ball at some point. So it's almost like going back to a college type situation, or CFL has those type situations, only they're including the kickoff and they're playing it a bit more straight up, let's say.
Okay, I knew this.
So when you flip the coin, and if you win in overtime, the advantage in all those scenarios, college, CFL, or this new rule in the playoffs, is to say we're going to go second because, one, we know what we need to beat. Okay? So if you score a touchdown, we know we have to go get a touchdown. So that means we're going forward on fourth, all that kind of stuff, whatever. If you kick a field goal, we know that we need to at least get 3, but if we get a touchdown, we win. So again, how do you push that? So the discussion after was, you know, somebody in San Francisco, I think Shanahan, was saying, well, what about the third possession? So let's say 49ers go down, kick a field goal. KC goes down and kicks a field goal. The third possession now is a field goal wins it. It's the next person to score wins it.
Right, right.
But you say, okay, well, if we go first, then we would get the third. Fine. But like everybody has pointed out, and I think even Pat Mahomes said that on one of his interviews, was like, look, when we never got to that point, but we knew, like, if Kansas City had scored a touchdown and we went down and scored a touchdown, we were going for 2 right away. Like, it was just, we were going for the win at that point. It wasn't going to say, we're going to give you the ball. And then at that point, that gives them the old overtime rules where it's like, look, all you got to do is get to like the 40 yard line and kick a field goal and be done. Mm-hmm. So they would have went for 2 anyway, which is realistic what's going to happen. So the advantage is really saying we're going to go second. There's a lot more positives to doing that. The 49ers didn't. And they were very like, hey, we're going to take the ball. And you say, okay. And even the ref was like, you're sure? And they got to take it. Okay. So do it. And it was just, even I think there's Juszczyk is in the huddle. He's mic'd up and he's like, you know, if we score a touchdown, like they still get the ball, you know, like the, all these things where it's coming out that a lot of the Niner players had no idea of the overtime rules in the playoffs. Okay. Versus okay. Andy Reid and his Chiefs all knew what it was because they're like, they've been hammering that on us since training camp, saying these are the new rules. This is how we're going to approach it. This is our strategy when we do it and what we want to do and how we like. So when people talk about Shanahan and saying, oh, he's got to be let go and stuff like that, again, most of them are just talking out of their ass, but because he's a great coach. You know what I mean? Like he has got a lot of success. I use the Marv Levy example all the time. If you're going to, you know, can a guy because he lost a couple Super Bowls, well, shit, Marv Levy lost four in a row, but he's still a Hall of Famer. Mm. Shanahan's a good coach. The preparation when it comes to the overtime rules and stuff, that's something that's very much unacceptable in my opinion. Mm. Clock management, somebody else brought that up with Andy Reid and Philly and stuff. Sure. You know, they screwed up, but those are split second decisions and not one you could really plan for like 100%. This is like, hey, there's new rules. Everybody's got to know what the fucking new rule is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, and so that's my issue.
You almost sensed that too, that there was 10 seconds before Kansas City ran that last play of the quarter because it starts a new game, right? I felt like San Fran was not prepared. I thought they thought Kansas City was going to let the clock run out and then, this was an overtime at the end of that first period. There was a whole sense of like, I think San Fran just thought KC was going to let the clock run out and then they'll flip sides, go to the other end of the, and they'll run a play. And I think KC caught him off guard. Like it was a 1 second differential, was there not? Play clock and game clock, I believe.
Yeah, it wasn't much, but all that does is, yeah, it would be the end of the quarter and say you're going to the other end and you would run whatever play from the other side.
But I wonder if San Fran's defense thought that it was in reverse, that the play clock was going to kill out before the game clock. And so it just seemed like they were unprepared. And of course, that play was really well executed.
You know, it was a really good play in that whole thing that you know, not that it goes untalked about, but there was a 4th-and-1 at one point that if KC didn't get it, the game was over. And they ran basically that two-man option between Mahomes and Kelsey. And they put that one guy, that halfback, whatever, on an island. And if he goes with Kelsey, great, Mahomes going to take it. If he happens to close out on Mahomes, he's just going to lateral like a little shovel pass to Kelsey and be a first down. It was run very well. He took Kelsey. Mahomes ran for about 8 or something like that, first down, kept it going. But that was, I mean, that's the game there if you stop them.
Yep. There was, look, man, it was, like I say, after that first quarter, it was pretty well coached on both sides. You know, a couple of fumbles here and there. But, like, you know, I find that makes the game a bit more dramatic. So, you know, these fans who expect perfection all the time, I mean, come on, man. These are grown men trying to kill each other. You know, you got guys swiping at footballs that are tucked away. They're going to fumble sometimes. It's going to happen. It's pro football. This idea that like everything has to be perfect all the time. It's just not the reality, guys. You know,
I mean, those guys that are coming to strip the ball, like they're coming with authority. Like they're throwing haymakers. Like these are
full punches
at balls. And
yeah,
that's not bad. But that like, you know, like it anyway. It's take a beating. You see the guys like McCaffrey and stuff afterwards. You know, I remember seeing some video where he's, you know, in his home, I think, and he just walked around shirtless. Of course, he's jacked, but he's just covered in bruises, you know. And it was after a game. And it's just say like the amount of beating that these guys take. Now, kudos to Pacheco. You know what I mean? Like he had a rough start to the game. Like as much as McCaffrey fumbling was like I've never heard of that, like because he just doesn't fumble. And his impact in the game and with the offense and everything that's goes without saying he's going to get the ball. Mm-hmm. Pacheco is one of those guys. Like he's not, I don't know. Like he's not one of the stars. And you say, okay, he had a fumble. I don't know if he had two or if he dropped the second one, but anyway, there's a couple of spots where I was like, this is a rough start for this kid. And they went back at him and he fought through it and, you know, ended up eating up some really important yards in that second half. And that opened things up too, right? Once he started getting a bit of success and they had to come downhill a bit, losing Greenlaw to that ACL on the sidelines, that hurts. Like crazy. When you go from those two guys and then it's just Warner, now you got to get a backup in there because he's a specimen, that kid, and would have made things even more difficult, probably. But he tore his Achilles. Oh, have you seen the video?
I can't watch it because I just can't. Like you know, it's like he was getting hyped up to get back on the field, and he took that one step on the back like a sprinter, and then
he was jumping up and down, boom, boom, let's go, and then went to take off, and it just went on him. And of course, that affects everybody.
I don't know if there's a better tandem in the NFL in the middle. There's not. I'll just say that now. There's not. Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw, there's no better tandem in the middle than those two guys.
No, they're up there.
You could maybe talk about Roquan Smith, Patrick Queen, but Patrick Queen has his deficiencies. So I'd have to put them up there with the best in terms of middle linebacking.
I heard more of Greenlaw's story after, too, where it was like he was kind of like adopted by another family. It was almost like a blindside sort of feel and stuff like that. Anyway, yeah, it's it all kind of came. But when you hear that after the fact, it's even more detrimental when you have a guy go down like that. But Niners have a lot of talent. They're going to be right back in the hunt. I think they're the favorites for next year.
Hey, Brock Purdy played excellent football. He, you know, he was under pressure. He made a couple of throws that were short at the end. But other than that, he made some great throws in the middle of the field. So, and you know, with primarily without Debo, he was hurt most of the game. So I thought,
Debo came back too. I'll give him that. Like crazy. I thought he was done when he goes down non-contact, grab that hamstring. I thought he was toast.
Absolutely.
And he came back and he still moved fairly well. Like for what he was trying to do, the O-line let him down on that, that one where Purdy had to throw it away almost.
Yeah.
Where Jennings was wide open. That looked like it should have been a slide to the right with the O-line. Mm-hmm. The center pops out and he goes backside. And so the right guard, whoever that was, went left instead of right. And then they end up getting, Chris Jones was wide open coming through there and put the pressure on. And, that was an opportunity that was missed. He makes the right call on that, gives Purdy a split second more, and he hits Jennings and he probably walks in for a touchdown. It's a game of inches.
I'm such a fan of, I don't like the Chiefs necessarily, but I respect them, and I like that Rashee Rice. What an excellent player. And Pacheco, he played great football this year. So I give them all full props for winning. They went out and won that game. It wasn't handed to them. They won the football game. So it was a well played football game. I thought it was entertaining, and I'll give the Super Bowl a B+. The officiating was pretty good. The halftime show was all right. The second half of it anyways, but if I can tie all this to, and I'll wrap up my 2024 feelings. This year was really a down year for the NFL. I'll be honest, in terms of excitement, there was no team that really stood out from anybody else. And if anyone says Baltimore, forget it. I mean, I had zero confidence that Baltimore was going to represent in the Super Bowl. I thought maybe Buffalo, I thought had a good chance. I really liked KC going into the playoffs. I had absolutely zero faith in Baltimore taking that next step. In the NFC, I mean, seemed to be San Fran and the rest, but like they had their moments during the season. There wasn't a single individual performance this year that really blew me away. I think Miami dropped 65 on the Broncos early in the year, but other than that, like there was really nothing. The football was sloppy. The scheduling was weird. The performances were so-so. I did not enjoy the season. And forget Pittsburgh, okay? Forget their record and all that stuff. I mean, they were 7-4 at one point, so I had nothing to be sad about. The football was shitty. Like, I don't know what to say. It was shitty.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even watch a lot of it. Like, there wasn't any, like, a huge draw for me for stuff to see. Everything that was of, like, shock value was all in a negative one. So whether it was, Deshaun Watson being hurt and getting out for the season and saying the Browns had a good start and then just fizzled completely out, to the Cowboys being dominant at home with, the typical Cowboys everywhere else fizzled out. Buffalo's the super high, and then you end up losing the KC. Same with Baltimore. There really the Lions. The Lions were a pleasant thing for me this year. That was absolutely probably one of the heights. Again, coming down to that last game, you know, that blowing that lead in that sort of fashion was, you know, again, it kind of ended on a downer. You know, it's I say Green Bay was Aaron Rodgers, you know, the whole height of the Jets at the beginning of the season, and then being
first game of the year, first play
like that took them right out of it. So again, everything's down. Jordan Love and the Packers, that was a surprise that I didn't think was going to be there. You know, I think even just the fact of KC being the road team throughout those playoffs for the majority of it was, you know, something that was kind of exciting to see, like, what, or like when you look back on it, you say that, yeah, they went through Buffalo and through Baltimore on the road. So it was no more of this, hey, it's always at Arrowhead and whatever. You have that, sure.
Yep.
You know, the biggest positive thing throughout this whole, or the most exciting thing of the NFL season is what? Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift and that story in KC.
Sorry, boys.
It's Taylor Swift. Like, she's the biggest story of the NFL this year. And I'm okay with it. She brings a good light to the NFL. There's a lot worse things, and we've gone through a lot worse things. But if you can pay Deshaun Watson $200 million and have him be the face of a franchise, and you get upset because Taylor Swift gets a bit of camera time, we're not friends.
Dude, I can't even explain. I'm sitting beside my sister, who I love, my niece, who I love, and they're watching the Super Bowl with me for the first time ever, really. First time ever. I've never watched the Super Bowl with my sister, solely because they wanted to see Kelce and the Chiefs and Taylor Swift. And they were Chiefs fans. My sister was rooting for the Chiefs. Like, she was like,
yeah,
Taylor Swift was an afterthought. She was cheering for the Chiefs. But I mean, like, that in a nutshell is what the impact they've had on the NFL and people like my sister who would not normally have watched. Like, let's face it, not normally have watched. So, you know, Taylor Swift is a pretty wholesome individual. Like, come on, guys, get over it. The camera panned out, what, like 3, 4, 5 times? Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, and really?
I think they went through the times of what she was on the screen. There's one game, I think she was at a minute. That was like the longest one. The rest are like 30 seconds maybe of camera time. You see, it's not even in the middle of plays. It's not anything. Like, you want a friggin' pizza commercial with the orange sweater bib? Is that what you want? Yeah. Like, you want more Buffalo Wild Wings? Like, who cares?
Who cares?
Anyway, it was good for the league. She was the biggest story all season. And I was there for it. I was all for it.
Yeah, so, same here.
That's that. Usher's thing was, I had higher expectations for him. Because he had so many opportunities. I feel like it could have just been a nonstop banger, but people were talking that up as potentially being one of the best Super Bowl halftime shows of all time, but it did not touch the Dre, Eminem, Snoop, and whatever. That one was like nonstop, and I think I was out of my seat that year. But anyway, things to look forward to next year, and hopefully they can one-up it, but do a quick, really super early prediction for next year.
Oh man. Well, I like Cincinnati next year. I think they're going to reload. You know, if they can bring back T. Higgins, they'll be all right. They're going to lose Boyd, but they can't get any worse. Their secondary was the worst in the NFL, and that cost them, of course. But having Burrow back, I thought they were picking up some momentum middle of the year before he got hurt. And I thought to myself, thank God, because that could have been the AFC representative. So I'm going to go Cincinnati having a bounce back here, as hard as that is for me to say. And in the NFC, boy, oh boy, it's a total toss-up. I think Philly bounces back, but I think it's the Niners. It's all going to go through the Niners next year.
Yeah, I mean, the Niners are favorites. I think it's going to be extremely hard, especially with the – I want to see what happens in the offseason, because the Chiefs – what's been really impressive for me with Mahomes, you know, versus like Brady and stuff. I know they probably started off the same way, but I mean, Brady did have years with Randy Moss and those kind of guys too, right? There were, you know, good acquisitions that were studs. This year, I found like his supporting cast was very subpar. And I think if they get somebody back, like imagine them with Tyreek Hill this year still, You know, it would just be insane. So if they get some other thing, I think it's going to be really hard for Kansas City, who's trying to three-peat with Andy Reid. Like, that's going to be a tough place to go. We'll see what happens. Obviously, I hope, you know, Josh Allen, the Bills can finally get through. I'd like to see the Lions continue with their success.
Yeah.
That's who I hope, you know, and I'll keep it at that. Really quickly, there was a post I saw today that was the next 10 Super Bowl champions and their MVPs.
Okay.
So the guy put this down. I screenshot it because I'm like, what are the odds? I want to see, like, you know, 3-4 years in, what happens? He's got the 2025, so he's got Bills winning it and the MVP being Josh Allen. Okay. The year after, it's the Eagles and Jalen Hurts is the MVP. Then in 27, it's Chiefs with Mahomes again. 28 is Chargers with Justin Herbert as the MVP. I guess he's got every single quarterback here as MVP. Anyway, 29 is the Bengals. 30 is the Chiefs again. And then it gets interesting because it's the 2031 and it's the Patriots and the MVP is Caleb Williams. So he's thinking that Williams is going to go to the Patriots at some point. The year after is in 2032. It's the Bears that are going to win the Super Bowl and the MVP is Joe Burrow. So at some point he's thinking that there's going to be some sort of trade there where Burrow ends up with the Bears.
Okay.
In 33, it's the Raiders and their MVP is CJ Stroud. So again, some sort of
trade
move there. And the last one he predicts is the Lions in 2034 and the MVP being Arch Manning, who hasn't even played a snap. Well, no, he has played a snap in college, but I don't even know where he's going to end up this year. Cause I think, Ewers is going back. So does he transfer, whatever. Anyway, I found it extremely interesting cause I wanted to see like just the trades and like where things happen kind of thing. But
yeah, anyway. You never know. He might be 50% on that. Who knows? Maybe he'll have the years off, but that's a pretty bold prediction to that. Even the trades themselves. I mean, like Raiders.
Just how, you know? Exactly. How they get to certain spots. And
interesting. Anyway. Speaking of, we got Detroit Lions, Seattle Seahawks, Houston Texans, and Denver Broncos. What's happening with them next year? This is a trick question.
Like there's four teams and something's happened to them next year?
Those four, yeah. I might be missing one there.
So being a uniform guy, I'm assuming it's something to do with their uniforms?
You are correct, sir. They're all getting revamped. I think Seattle's moving to a silver lid. I don't know if they're going to go full throwback, but they're moving to a silver lid. Denver's getting a whole new uniform. The Texans are getting a whole new uniform, and they're incorporating the Love Ya Blue, the baby blue, into their mix. It won't be the old Houston Oilers one, but it'll be some baby blue in there.
Yeah, who wore the Oilers this year? It was
Tennessee.
Tennessee, because they moved from Houston to Tennessee.
Right.
But now Houston has it. Okay.
And Detroit is changing their uniforms. I don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to ditch the that blue helmet that they had as a backup there this year. But I think they're just going to – if I'm guessing – they're going to try to mix new with the old, with the Barry Sanders era, though, with the blue face mask. Man, perfection. Perfection. I love that look, man. I don't know why. These throwbacks, the Jets are going back full time to the New York Stock Exchange green and whites with that Jets logo across their helmet. Like, the league is clearly better off with these throwbacks, man. It's beautiful stuff.
Awesome. They can't be throwbacks unless you go some different direction and then come back to it, right? Otherwise, it's just the same old stuff. So we're going to see, again, we've Tampa with their colors. We've already seen that.
I love it.
But we'll, it'll be fun. But once they get back to their old glory days, hopefully the Eagles go back to that Kelly Green on a bit more.
They're supposed to, so, pal. But we're in the middle of, I guess February is a bit of a lull. The hockey, the NBA All-Star game is this weekend. Who gives a shit?
Correct.
Hockey, I literally have not watched a second. I'm trying to watch Bedard and McDavid and some of the stars, but I'm so not into it, buddy. I really am not.
I watch the highlights for the most part, although I have Ottawa on right now. But seeing Connor McDavid and do that, is that a Blue Jays hat already? It's kicked off. Pitchers and catchers are in session.
February 24th, the first Grapefruit League, do they still call it that? The first exhibition game against the Phillies, I think. Do you think, I'll ask you one last question. Do you think the Jays will make one more move that isn't internal?
What do you mean by internal? Like a move, like sending somebody down or whatever?
Well, yeah, like they'll, you know, their third base, I think third base is still a thing for them right now. I don't know if they're settled with Justin Turner, or if they're going to play Kiner Falefa there, or if they're going to bring Orelvis up. And do you think they actually make a deal? Matt Chapman's still out there.
I was just going to say, Chapman hasn't signed anywhere, right?
No, the only big name that signed recently was Jorge Soleri, signed with the Giants for, I thought, was like three years, 42 mil. The Jays can't afford that? Like, what the hell? They paid Kiermaier 1 year, 13 mil. They paid...
Vladdy took an arbitration, extra mil and a half there.
I guess.
And a lot of...
Do you think they make a move? Do that?
I'm going to say... You know what? I'm going to say no, because I hope they do, in which case they probably won't, and whatever. Yeah. But I hope they do. I think they need to. I think, you know, whole this talk about the pressure and stuff like that, I think, I don't know. Like, I need that. There's got to be a splash. There hasn't been. And, you know, unless these guys all completely come out of their shell and are dominant at the same time, because they all have talent, but can they do it all at the same time for a whole season and stay healthy and whatnot? I don't know about that. And the odds aren't great. So I don't know. I would have liked you see these big names and these big splashes going to other teams that we are competing against. So with that aspect alone, I feel like we've taken a step back. Like, if we're kind of at the same level, we're losing ground.
It's possible. So, and I'll say this about, there's Cody Bellinger still out there. Joey Votto, I'd really love to see him in Toronto as a Canadian guy. You know, he could be so valuable, so valuable. Blake Snell, was one of the top five pitchers in all of baseball, is still out there.
Oh, go get Brett Bauer. Brett Bauer?
Trevor Bauer?
Trevor Bauer. Who's Brett Bauer? Is he some guy I know from Elmer? Anyway.
Brett Bauer?
Brett Bauer?
Sounds familiar. Sounds popular, but it's... Yeah.
If it's who I'm thinking of, he's not. But Trevor Bauer is. And league minimum, incentives. I like the kid. And I think it came out that he was like wrongfully whatever, right?
I think he was fully exonerated, I think is the word. I'm not really sure. Anyway, I'm glad that happened. But like, I want to say this also, that I'm trying to be the optimist when you compare, you know, comparing Belt to Justin Turner, I don't think is fair. I think Turner's a way better overall player, and he has like 30 home run potential. So I'll look at that as an upgrade. And the only spot they haven't filled is Chapman. And technically they have with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, but I mean, I don't know what you're getting with that guy offensively. He might have a better contact bat. So I'm trying to play.
Sounds like a side dish to a shawarma. But anyway,
I'm trying to be the optimist here. Like, you know, just comparing what they lost to what they acquired.
Well, maybe let's go through what the lineup was last year, what it is this year, and go through it, because the people who tuned in for the Super Bowl, not likely to give a shit. We'll do another show on the Jays. Yeah,
well, we're gonna have to. So let's reconnect in a couple of weeks, pal, when the Jays have a more clearer vision of what's going on with their roster, and we can have a chat.
Look forward to it. On that note, the NFL 2023 season comes to an end. Everybody tune in and find the NCAA football video game. We'll be back this summer.
You are not buying that. I'm buying that for you for your birthday.
Oh, you heard it here first. That's old and then you can kiss the rest of my summer goodbye because it is on.
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Until next time for the NFL, and we'll be back with some more Jays stuff in the near future.
Bye.